Welcome to the latest episode of the Keeping Pace podcast. I'm your host, Mike Moreau. Ryan Couturn is my latest guest. Ryan is a ball of energy, and you feel that during the length of our conversation. He is passionate about life and everything he does. We talk about his latest full Ironman, how to make endurance sports more visible, and why he believes in what his physical capabilities are instead of his limits. Enjoy the conversation. Hey, Ryan, how's it going?
Oh, it's good. It's going pretty well, Mike. How are you doing?
I'm doing all right. I'm just getting home from practice and a long day. How about yourself?
Oh, that's good. Yeah. You know what? I'm just getting back home from work myself. Our team, Align Modern Health, is getting ready for the marathon. So we did some quick little preparation stuff and some like clinical stuff so we can get ready for all the runners in a couple of weeks. Pretty excited.
Yeah, we'll definitely have to talk about that at some point, but you know, I'd like to get to know a little bit more about you. So why don't you start off with a little introduction of yourself?
Yeah, sounds good. So this is always so funny when you have to introduce yourself and tell people who you are. But so my name is, you know, Ryan Couturn. I'm an endurance athlete, you know, triathlon most recently, but definitely consider myself, you know, marathoner and things like that, and aspiring to do bigger and other things. I'm one of the coaches for Chicago Endurance Sports. I've been a coach there now for, I would say, oh, so now it's a little bit more than 10 years, which is amazing how much time has flown. I'm also the director of community partnerships with Align Modern Health. So I've been with Align now for 6 years. So long mainstays for everything. Yeah. And then, you know, really just for me and like myself, you know, I am someone who like seeks to find self-discovery. And I think that's a big thing I want to kind of throw out there, because it's something that I've been cultivating, you know, understanding and learning about myself. But, you know, I'm one who wants to know what my physical capabilities are and not limitations. So that making sure we understand that it's not my physical limitations, but what are my capabilities? Want to know how well one can do. I want to see beautiful places, right? I think that's been a big piece of, you know, who I've been over the last, you know, especially in the last year and the last couple of years. And I don't want any physical limits to ever hold me back. So the job that I have, the hobbies that I choose, the communities I belong to, and the friends that I have, the decisions I make are all guided by that. You know, and I think above all else, I'm just enthusiastic about everything, right? I think a lot of people who know me know that I love and like to smile. And I think that one should just be enthusiastic about everything that you do. Otherwise, you know, what's the point of doing it? So yeah, that's a little bit about myself.
Yeah, you said something interesting in there about, you know, your physical capabilities. And I thought that's something I don't think I've heard it described as that before. Where do you think that mentality came from?
You know, it's been a few years now that I've been introduced to and really intentionally honing the idea of a growth mentality, right? And I think far too often, a lot of us put immediate limitations on the things that we can and cannot do. And just over the last, you know, few years, you know, the greater part of these last 10 years, really, I've just been, you know, looking for things that really interest me and intrigue me. And, you know, it was only just, you know, 10 years ago, 11 years ago, let's say maybe a little before that, before I did my first marathon, I don't know if I would have told you I would have been a marathoner. I might have told you, yeah, I've done a marathon once and it was pretty cool, right? Like a lot of people believe that they wanted to do it, be a one and done. I always love to contradict that, like say there's no way, there's a greater chance that you're not going to be a one and done than you are going to be a one and done. Yeah. So, you know, and then, you know, just little things started intriguing me more and more. You always find the next craziest idea or the crazier person or athlete that's doing something wild. And then you kind of look at it and you kind of look at yourself like, can I do that? And like, does that sound cool and sound awesome and amazing enough of an experience to do it yourself? And so just by being part of this, truly this amazing endurance sport world, I just keep on finding new things I want to do and grow into. So, you know, I'm, you know, some people might say I'm getting close to, you know, the top of this, you know, the age hill per se, but my gosh, I really do feel like I'm still, growing and finding more things that I can do. So really it's more like, what am I capable of? Not what I'm limited to.
I love that, you know, that attitude. And I think it's refreshing to hear, you know, because we all can be capable of a lot of self-doubt.
Yeah. Oh, it's, gosh, how do we want to say it? Like, it happens. it happens to all of us, really, right? Like, we all, you know, and there's certainly, you know, certain things that I will never play in the NBA, right? That's just not going to happen at this moment, right? there's certain limiting things, but like, there's so many more things that we can do, right? I don't think I would have ever told you I would have ever been an Ironman. So therefore, because now that I've achieved that and achieved it a couple times over, you know, I do think about what's the next thing. And, you know, there's other things that kind of open up, like, you know, I've never been a climber. That's something I absolutely want to get myself into and am sure and confident that I can take it to a certain degree. Right. And I want to know what that, so it really is, it's the mentality, right? It's the capable versus what do you think your limited abilities are. It's like the glasses half full or glasses half empty kind of thing. Right. It's like, how much more can you do versus like what, how much more or what do you, yeah. What can you only do? So yeah, that's kind of where my head's at. And for sure, like, I don't ever foresee that changing ever.
Yeah. It's awesome to have that mentality. And I'm curious to find out, you know, we talked about a little bit where it came from, but is this something that you got into as a kid or in high school, or is it something you just had to develop over time?
Well, you know, so with that mentality in general, I had to definitely lean back to some little bit of like childhood events that allowed me to believe that I can still, that, you know, as long as I stick to something and, you know, with all my heart and my enthusiasm, I can do it. Right. But for sure, you know, like, I mean, when I, you know, after college, I definitely had, you know, limited ideas and things like that. And so, yeah, it is absolutely something like, yeah, I'll lean to this. You know, I know we were talking about this before. How did I ever get into like marathoning and things like that? I think that's probably where the start of all that, where like the snowball really began. And I'll tell you, like, two things happened when that led me into this mindset. So I, truth be told, I had like one bad breakup, right? You know, I was with, you know, someone for a long time and something happened, we broke up. And I was kind of like, oh, what a bummer, you know, like, I was searching all around for, you know, things I was going to do. I remember that was like when the recession hit, there was a stall in some projects I was doing for work. And I was like, oh my gosh, now my job is kind of limited right now. What am I supposed to do with myself? And I just remember two things really happening. One, everywhere I went to, every restaurant, bar, coffee shop, wherever, I kept on seeing these signs that said, come and train for the marathon. We'll help you train for the marathon. You know, all these different charity, you know, pamphlets that were saying, you know, do this for a good cause and this and that, we'll help you get to the finish. And I remember being at one of my favorite Thai restaurants up on the north side. And I remember seeing like three different brochures. I'm like, and I remember out loud saying, fine, I'll take it, fine. And I took all three brochures, right? And I'm like, I'll go, okay, fine. Like, I felt like someone was like constantly poking me with this. And, you know, I did think, you know, I did run cross country for fitness, not so much for competition. In high school, I was a decent enough runner to be asked to be on the cross country team. And so I had in myself, you know, seeing my coach be a marathoner, that, you know, maybe one day I'll be, you know, I'll do this as a kick the bucket list kind of thing. So that happened. And then I also picked up, you know, my first, like, at least I could think of, like, self-help book. And it was this thing called The Four Agreements. And it was just, you know, all these things about like just empowerment and things like that. I honed in so hard into those two things that truly that first marathon really spiraled up towards, you know, like, you know, if I could do this, what else can I do? You know, I remember my uncle saying like, hey, but this is just, it's just a hobby. It's just a hobby. Right. And I remember thinking to myself, looking at him like, is this just a hobby? What do I feel like there's something, like there's something kind of bigger and grander in all this. And then also, you know, that book that I told you I picked up, The Four Agreements, it's a small, quick read. You know, if anyone's ever heard of this book, but it, like, you really can just look at the front and the back and it will give you the four agreements. But you read through the book and it gives you, you know, goes a little more into depth. But I remember reading those agreements like every day, those four things, for, I would say, a good 3 months, like just nonstop every single day, just totally got ingrained in my head. And then I started, you know, then I started truly believing in those things. Right. And it, I thought it was just pretty, pretty amazing stuff. So like those two things, like, really helped, you know, open up just, you know, a huge door into, you know, that thought process and that mindset. Then you start going down that list of like different books that you can read and podcasts, especially podcasts, you know, like that was a really big thing for me. Impact Theory. I don't know if anyone has ever picked up that. Mike, I don't know if you ever heard that. Impact Theory is probably the biggest podcast that I had been leaning on and listening to that really opened up that doors of a growth mindset. And then on top of it, they had endurance athletes, someone that you may or may not have heard of, David Goggins. I think he might've been the first one to interview David Goggins. That was the first interview I heard. So, I mean, you know, being an endurance athlete and everybody's thinking, into that growth mindset, that just, I mean, that pulled me in really hard, and just opened up, you know, the whole thing.
No,
have you heard of those two groups? Have you heard of like Impact Theory and or David Goggins?
I've heard of David Goggins because he's, of all about that. What's the challenge he does? Is it 24 miles and something?
Yeah, it's like 4 miles every 4 hours for 48 hours.
Yeah, I've heard of him for that. And I know his book is supposed to be pretty good, but I'm not familiar with that other podcast. It's definitely something I'm going to have to check out.
Oh yeah, definitely. I don't know how well it's going to speak to you. I think I truly do believe that, you know, different things speak to different people, and they speak loudly for some people, and you know, some, you know, it doesn't, which is totally fine. But he has a ton of different great guests that are just, you know, thought leaders and you know, different entrepreneurs and things like that, who people who are achieving some really incredible things. And they show you how to do it. You know, like if you ever feel like you can't do something, I think that it'll absolutely change your mind as long as you find the right, you know, the right interview and the right things. But David Goggins is, I mean, for anyone who's ever feeling sorry about themselves, and if you only know about that challenge, you have to read his book or listen or hear his story. Because then that will open up the whole thing. They'll make you understand like why this guy is the way he is and how incredible he is and realize that, like, you know, he's not a superhero. He's just someone that was driven by, you know, some tough times. And I think that anyone can, you know, feel like they could, you know, almost achieve anything because of that.
Yeah. And on that, a similar note, I don't know if you're familiar with Steve Magnus or Brad Stolberg. Like, I've read a couple of their books, and they just came out with the third, actually, called The Growth Equation, that I'm also curious to read.
Oh, fantastic. You know, I have not heard of these two. And I'm curious if he's, if either of those two have been on any of the different podcasts I listen to. But yeah, I mean, that we'll have to talk, you know, about that again, and I'll have to listen to this interview again just so I can get those names.
Definitely. So I want to go back to, you know, you training for your first marathon. I've asked a bunch of people who've been on, like, you know, who've done like distance events or various events, like, what was their, you know, that first experience like for you?
Oh man. So I'll say this, like, that first season, and I think, well, it was amazing. I did this first marathon in 2008. So it was another very hot year. It was the year after the year in Chicago marathon where, like, I believe they canceled it mid race or stopped at mid race. Something was a little wrong with how they did the hydration stations. They were low on water and things like that. The next year was equally as hot, but just as, but they were way more prepared, right? They figure out all their mistakes that year. I would say, I can't tell you how many mistakes I did throughout the year. Probably because I could have been a better student that year, right? I was so excited to do the whole thing. I mean, it was so awesome. I did it with a charity. So it's with the Leukemia and Lymphoma Society. And I did this with five friends. We raised money. And it was just really wonderful. It was organized. They had the pace groups. We had coaches. I did fail to fully understand, and maybe it was, you know, ego in me that was thinking that I can run X pace for the whole time, because if I wanted to do the marathon at this pace, I should do it at this pace too, right? So I was definitely running the whole season in at race pace, and I was definitely not doing the right shoes. I definitely picked out shoes that I thought looked cool. they were the Nike Shox, if you can remember. I grew up as a basketball player, and I grew up, you know, in Chicago in like the thick of the Jordan era. So I also ran that marathon with the biggest, baggiest Jordan basketball shorts that by the time it was the end, and I trained all season with it, so I thought it was fine. And by the time I got to the end of the race, when my shorts just got doused with, you know, hydration that was spilling on me and sweat, I mean, they were like literally halfway down to my shins, sagging. And it's funny because I think about it now, and I had a blast that first marathon. You know, someone told me, and I think it was our coaches, like, you'll never have your first marathon ever again. So you got to have fun. You can't take this that seriously. You know, come back again, do it again, you know, to beat that time or whatever. And I took that to heart, man. I mean, like, I really did. I was like, you know, I'm doing everything. Like, this is gonna be crazy. I remember, yeah, just doing every little mistake that I would never tell my runners to do, but I will tell them in the story that, like, look, I had a ball and it was still arguably my favorite marathon. I remember there was these high five signs and they would hang them up, like, I don't know, like 9-10 feet up. And I would look at this, you know, and I'm like, oh, you know what? I can get that in mid marathon. Right. And I would do like a gather step and try to get up and leap and smack this high five sign. And people all around, their friends, are like, there's no way you're gonna finish this marathon. They're like, you're going to gas yourself. I'm like, I don't really care. I'm like, you know what? This is a blast. I'm high-fiving all the kids, all the people out there. And then, you know, I got to this point. I remember I got to a mile. I know you want to ask me for training, but man, the race is so much more hilarious. I think I got to like, you know, on the south end, like near White Sox, you know, Comiskey Park. And then my friend had met up with me. He was going to join me in for the run for the last, you know, maybe for a couple miles. A couple of things I thought was funny. I didn't know that he had asthma, so he took his inhaler. I'm like, wow, you're going to run the next whoever, how knows how long with it, you know, and you have asthma? Like, this is crazy. And I remember there was a ton of people out there with beer and they were like handing out beer to people. And my friend's like, look, man, you're not going to make it to the time that you said you're going to make. He's like, why not just take a swig of some beer? I'm like, you know what? That sounds like it makes sense. And so I remember taking like two cups and just like taking down a beer in the middle of the run. Third one, it was just so hot out, I just splashed on myself. It was unbelievable. I'll tell the story, you know, it's just the funniest thing. And like, that was my first marathon. And I do coach marathoners now, and I absolutely teach the right way and things like that. But I will tell the story out of humor. But that year was, I mean, it was truly wonderful. It really did open up everything else to me. It made me want to come back and do the next marathon the next year. I remember I had this mentor, and she was just as hyper as I was. And her name is Lori. A lot of people might know her out there. She knows if she ever listens to this. And they're like, I can't believe we're going to put you two together. You're both like a ball of caffeine. I don't understand how we're putting both of you together. And she was just so wonderful because she, you know, went on to do triathlons and Ironmans and things like that. And she was always one to kind of like ask me, are you going to do this? Are you going to do that? And it really helped kind of like foster and get my, you know, endurance career up and started. I remember she got me my first hotel room and my first Ironman. Like, she had booked it well ahead. She's like, you should get this room because it's this close to the finish line. So yeah, Lori, she's been such an awesome like advocate for the things I was doing. But yeah, like that first year was absolutely wild. I do believe, you know, you do the mistakes that first time around so that you can kind of come back and you can say like, hey, look, this is what I did. It's not the way I would ever teach this. I think it's actually the wrong way to do it. But I know now because I did it the wrong way, but I had a good time doing it. So that was our first year.
I think it's awesome that you had so much fun because, you know, I don't often hear that story from people during their first marathon. They're like, oh, I just had a blast. And, you know, I keep coming back. I feel like more often than not, you hear the stories of, oh, that was horrible. I'm never doing that again.
Yeah, no, that's true. Look. All right. On the other side, that's is the glass half full thing kind of thing. I was absolutely hurting. I mean, I was dying out there, right? Like, I did hit the panic button. I didn't practice my nutrition. Oh, I did. I did practice nutrition, you know, during our training days, but I hit the panic button. I totally did. Like, I remember at one point I was just taking down all the nutrition, thinking that was the answer. And, you know, I way overdid it. Right. Like, you take the goo with the Gatorade kind of thing, right? Like, don't follow the goo with the Gatorade. So yeah, I was hurt. I remember I bought myself the present to myself for doing the marathon was this beautiful sectional couch, and it had like an ottoman to it. I called it the black hole because literally all of my five friends who came over, we could all fit on this thing like comfortably. And it was the worst decision, right? Like, you're supposed to move around after the marathon, so you get the blood flowing, get the lactic acid out, you don't get stiff. No. We went back, we crashed on this couch, and we all got up, and it was rough, right? My roommates did the marathon with me, and it was rough. So, you know, like, there's certainly a rough and a dark side to it, but there's also a joy to it, right? Like, I think all of us as endurance athletes know the pain that we're going to go through, but for some reason, there's a joy to that, right? And I think we can, you know, somewhat articulately speak to the joy that comes from the pain. But yeah, it was certainly there. But the bigger story that I would ever tell anyone is that it was certainly a great time. most definitely.
Yeah, I often tell people about my first, and like, you know, I work at Fleet Feet, and I always tell first time marathoners, I'm like, okay, here's all the things I did wrong, so you don't do them. Cause I like, I want you to know all the things that I did wrong so you can fix them and not have that, you know, same painful experience I did.
Yeah, no, I hear it. You know, and it's funny, like, you know, like it's not like my coaches didn't tell me those things. I do remember them saying those things. Sometimes it just didn't hit, you know, hit close to home. And sometimes you just kind of go like, well, I'm going to do it anyway. Right. Like this is what I'm going to do. And sometimes it just takes maybe that one other person, that one other coach, or, you know, training partner that tells it a different way that it really hits, right. You're like, okay, awesome. Got it. Like, that's the one I'm going to do, you know? So,
yeah.
You know what I mean? Yeah.
No, 100%. I actually want to go back to high school with you. Cause you said you were, you know, you grew up a basketball player. How did you get into running and like joining the cross country team?
Oh yeah. I truly played basketball since I was, you know, 8 years old, like on teams and with coaches and camps every summer and all that stuff. But I was always, my endurance was always really good. And I realized that probably mid grade school, that when our coaches would have us do like laps around the school or even like suicide sprints, right? Like, not only was I able to, you know, beat out most of my teammates in like short sprints, but like, I can just keep going. And I remember we'd do these one, oh gosh, I remember our coach would have us run through the school, like down a hallway, down the stairs, into the basement, up the stairs, through the gymnasium, down the other hallway, up to the second floor, like a crazy run. And he would say, all right, we're doing 50 of those. And that's gonna be our practice today. We're like, what? And I was like, you know, like whatever. I see what he's trying to, you know, have us do. He's trying to get us conditioned, and I would just go. And I was just good at it. You know, we would do, you know, the mile in school. And I don't think I was ever like the best, but I was up there. I was within, you know, at least the top, you know, 3 to 5 people. And then, you know, going into, but we didn't, you know, at the time we didn't have cross country. We just had basketball. We had other sports, but basketball is my thing. And then we went to, you know, high school. And basketball was always my thing. So I stuck to that. And my coach, my math teacher was the cross country coach, and he hung outside of my, outside of class that freshman year. And, he, you know, after, you know, you run the mile in gym, and, you know, the gym teacher takes down all the times. I remember he asked me, he's like, hey, Mr. Couturin, did you, he's like, let me ask you about this. He's like, did you run the mile in gym? He's like, it looks like you ran, you know, at that time it was probably like 5:30, you know? And he was like, you really like, it was like a 5:30. It looks like it was pretty good. He's like, do you like running? I'm like, I do it for, for fitness and stay in shape for basketball. And he's like, well, I always talk to your basketball coach, and we both feel that you should do cross country to keep you in shape and even get you better. It was, you know, not something I ever really cared to do or wanted to do. Even when I was on the team, I wasn't really into the racing mentality. I was always hanging out with the wrestlers who didn't do football, who were just doing it to get in shape and things like that. And they were so much fun. So, I mean, you know, I my conditioning was always good. I was able to hang like as like our top three runners. I usually say 3 to 4. So I think, yeah, I at least had that little bit of a background, but I didn't know how to really push and race, because it was never in like my mentality for it. I was always thinking like, this is conditioning for basketball. So that's really how this all started, I think.
Yeah, I feel like that's how it starts for a lot of people. It's like with Lori, you know, that she helped you, you know, kind of get into, you know, like you said, the Ironman experience. And then you had the math teacher who kind of gently nudged you into doing cross country.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah. And then there was, so even like the swim coach, my sister was a swimmer, right? She was a swimmer in the family. I was not, even though I can swim, I can hold, you know, I won't drown in water. Let's just say that at that time. And I remember hearing like stories, and they actually had an image of him, a few images of him in the pool area of completing the Ironman. So this is, you know, I graduated from high school in 2000. So this is in the 90s. So he was, you know, one of the, you know, originals, like seems like, right, in the 90s. And then there's another gym coach, younger guy. And I remember he was training for the Ironman. And I remember like, they just said Ironman. I understood the distances that he was doing. I guess I never understood like that this could be for anyone, or this could even be for me. But even at that time, right, if you think about it, right, and we'll probably get into this later and talk about, you know, how, you know, these little things influence, you know, the youth and other people. But, you know, even though I didn't see myself as an Iron Man or ever had that impressions I would ever aspire to be one, I guess even seeing that all the way back then, even just that little hint of it was like, oh, this is an Iron Man. These are how two Iron Man people look like. Great. Awesome. That's enough information for me. I'm not gonna do anything with it now, but maybe it'll come up later in the future. You know, I guess it did. So
it's so funny. You had that mentality and kind of like put it in the back of your head for later, because the athletic director at my school, you know, was a big time marathoner. And I just like, I thought it was so cool. But at the time in high school, like I played football, baseball, and basketball, but I never thought I'd do anything with running. So like doing a marathon was like the furthest thing from my mind.
Oh, I couldn't agree more. Right. Like that probably why I didn't care to be good at cross country is because of all the athletic teams. I think we were like the lowest on the totem pole. Right. We were the guys that are out there with the short shorts. Right. Like the super short shorts, the skimpiest outfit, you know, like, but we weren't beefy like the wrestlers were. Like, you can't make fun of the wrestlers. Right. Or the gymnast guys. Right. Cause those guys are stacked. The cross country people are just a little more, you know, we're light, we're lean. So it was probably one of those things that, you know, same thing. Like that, it was pretty far from my plans. You know, first plans were to become an NBA player and things like that. Never was to be a cross country or I'm sorry, a marathoner. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, we grew up in the Jordan era. How did none of us want to be NBA players?
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. You know, like they marketed that sport through him and Magic, and he was marketable and things like that. And yeah. So like, why would I ever, like, I didn't, you know, none of the marathoners ever popped up on my, you know, on our radar. So like, why would we ever want to become a marathoner if it was never in front of us? Right. It was there. The hints were there, right? Like your director, my coaches, my teacher, the little hints were there, but it certainly wasn't the people that were like truly being marketed to us. Right.
Yeah, I think it's funny how that works, because I still think it's the same way, you know, even though there are more ways to watch, you know, endurance sports, it's still difficult for kids to get into. And I wish there were better ways to be like, hey, you know, this is something you can do. Like, not everyone has to be a football, baseball, or basketball player.
Yeah. You know, it's so this is a really good topic here. You know, it's something that I've thought about a lot. Truly a lot, you know, over the last few years, even if it's my time working at Fleet Feet and things like that. And, you know, I'll throw out the name. Let me ask you this. Do you know who Mark Allen is?
I'm not familiar with him.
Okay. Do you know what the Iron War is?
No, I do not know what that is.
Ooh. So this is very fun. This is good. I always tell people now that I know what these things are, that was the Jordan story and the Jordan overcoming the Pistons before actual Jordan overcame the Pistons. Mark Allen and Dave Scott, those two were the kings of the Iron Man in like the 80s and then to the early 90s. And these two people, so Mark Allen, the Iron War. So so Mark Allen, he was this amazing endurance athlete, amazing Iron Man, and he could win every race, all these different races, but he could never win the main one, the world championships in Kona. That was Dave Scott's territory, right? Dave Scott had won it six times, something like that. Yeah, I believe it was six times. And a number of years, Mark Allen would come up second, third, wherever, just could never get over the top. And he recognized Dave Scott because he's the man, you know, he's the king of that sport. And it was driving him absolutely nuts. Like he was like, I don't know how to ever overcome this. The Iron War is a story, and it's a book. It's a wonderful book. Everyone should pick this up, about the battle of those two going into that Iron Man year where Mark Allen finally overcomes Dave Scott. And in that race, they stay with each other the whole way. I'm saying, if you hear interviews, Mark Allen talks about how he's on Dave Scott's heels on the swim. He's tapping his feet. Like, he's that close to him. They're on the bike. They're staying very close to each other. They're on the run. They're dropping it. Like, and then at that time, it was very big to be at a 6 minute pace and things like that. They might even drop it down to the, you know, five, you know, sub six. They were neck and neck the entire race. And they didn't say one thing to each other. And then finally in the last 5K, Mark Allen turns on the jets when Dave Scott doesn't think he's gonna turn the jets on just yet. And he leaves them, and he finally wins his first championship. And then he goes on to win like five in a row. I'm saying five in a row. And, you know, Dave Scott, you know, his time is over. Mark Allen leaves for a little bit, kind of like how Jordan left, you know, with retirement. Left for a couple of years. Mark Allen does the same thing, comes back. Now he's in like his mid-30s. He's considered, you know, old for the sport. And, you know, his big thing is like, can I come back and, you know, and reclaim the crown? And he does. And he does. So this story happens before Jordan does his thing. And I always ask, like, gosh, this story is so freaking good. And when you hear, like, Mark Allen actually talk about it, and there's actually a ton of interviews now where Dave Scott and Mark Allen kind of talk about their reign at the top and when the Americans used to reign in Ironman. And it's so good. You know, now as an adult, listening to these stories, I'm like, gosh, this is so good. Why am I just hearing about this now, right? Like, I never heard the story. And this happened before Jordan did it. Right. And I think there's a couple of things that kind of fall into that. You know, one thing, I don't know, like how accessible I think maybe like Nike and the big name brands thought the sport of triathlons and Ironman was to the general population, right? Like basketball, you actually just need a ball, right? You need a ball and some sort of basket, but, right? Or anything, right? Like you can technically shoot hoops, you know, with a crumbled up piece of paper and a garbage can, right? You could do that. Or you really just need a minimal, like a basket, like something, a basket and a ball. I, you know, in the Philippines, people are playing basketball with, you know, they call them chinelas, which is basically flip-flops. And they're running hard up and down, you know, on the courts in the Philippines with just that. So you can't even say you don't even need shoes, but, you know, shoes are probably another good piece. But like, That sport is so, like, think about how easy it is for someone in, you know, in a third world country like the Philippines to pick up that sport than to, like, think of, like, all right, we're going to make, you know, running is pretty accessible, right? And I guess you don't need shoes for that either, technically. Cycling is the one thing, right? Cycling is the one thing. It's like, you need a bike, you know, and, like, to truly maybe compete in the sport, like, you need somewhat of a decent, to participate in it, you don't, right? You see people now at the Chicago Triathlon doing on a divvy and things like that. But I think, you know, who knows what, you know, what the people who do currently market the sport and or were marketing it back then thought of what Mark Allen was or Dave Scott. But the other side of it is too, like, I think you also point at, like, how marketable were these people? And I think about that all the time, you know, being in marketing myself, I think about this all the time, that endurance sports like marathoning, triathlons and things like that, they need someone. Maybe, you know, obviously the sports are enduring, you know, lack of better words here, on their own just fine. But man, there's a whole other leap that marathoning and Ironman can take if the right athlete came around. And when I say the right athlete, athletes have the physical capability. They're breaking, you know, records left and right. The biggest thing that our athletes miss is enthusiasm and marketability. I wholeheartedly believe that. Is that, like, you know, to be able to, like, look in a camera and smile at a camera and wink and, like, be able to hold yourself well in front of, you know, in front of a camera and in front of other people and to, like, you know, command a room and just have that, right? Like that smile. The people like Magic Johnson, that Michael Jordan, Kobe, LeBron James all have, right? They have that, they got that smile and they have that swagger about them, right? They have this thing about them. They're like, a little kid can go, like, I want to be like that. That's why I'm going to go and do that sport. You know, that's why there is so much diversity in that sport, right? Because anyone from, you know, a poor neighborhood, poor country can pick that up and go, I want to be like that. You know, I can do that. And they also see the stories, right? They see the stories of people being, you know, starting from the bottom and coming up in it. You know, they know that they can get themselves out, like kind of like boxers would, right? Like that's why people, you know, get into those sports. Like they can see that. But right now in the sport of marathoning and triathlons and Ironman, I hate to say it, and people can challenge me on this all day, we don't have the athlete yet that comes around that transcends the sport. And I'm saying transcend. So like people who might listen to this, like I know like Dave Zimmer or someone else might go, well, what about, this person and that person, and they'll say a name like, hey, but hey, ask someone outside of your circle of running. Tell me if they know that name. Right. Tell me if your mom knows who Kipchoge is. Right.
If they know, that's the name I've been thinking of the whole time. But like I was thinking that same thing. I was like, how many people outside of our circle really know who he is?
They don't. Right. I can ask my mom for sure, and she'll know who LeBron James is 100%. Right. I could ask anyone like that question, and they'll usually know who LeBron James, Michael Jordan, those people are. So do you hear me? Like I don't know if you've ever thought about that, but like I'm missing that.
I get it completely, because you know my mom will occasionally ask me about BJ Armstrong, and he was like the sixth man.
Yeah, exactly. You know, it was really funny. So I got to tell you this funny story. So this past summer, I did my first the first race I got out of. I think I might have been one of the first people to race at official race post pandemic. It was in April. It was like mid April. I raced in Florida. I did a half Ironman, and I mean there was all these regulations that, and more so even now. Like I mean, we were wearing masks outside leading up until the, like right before we crossed the start line for the swim. So like we were masked up, right? 6 feet apart. And anyway, so like I'm at this race and I do an Airbnb. And the host of the Airbnb tells me there's another triathlete in his home. I'm like, oh, fantastic. Cause I'm nervous, right? Like it's been a while since I've, you know, done, you know, an event in person. And, you know, not to mention a half Ironman, and I want to be able to like talk it out with someone and hear their nervous energy so I can help relax too. Right. So I go to this thing and the host tells me, oh, he's already here. I'm like, great. Awesome. I can't wait to meet this guy. You know, I'm always up for meeting new people, talking to people and things like that. And I go to my room and I look outside. And I see this guy go outside and he's going to his car, takes his shirt off, getting off for a run. It's, you know, it's 80 degrees, it's Florida. And I'm like, oh my God, this dude, like he looks chiseled, right? I'm like, I'm looking at this guy, I'm like, oh man, I'm like, who is this guy? Like he just looks lean and ready about to do something. So anyway, I pop out there. I clearly see he's doing a shakeout run. So I plan it out, get out there. I'm like, hey man, I'm like, my name is Ryan, you know. Are you the other triathlete that's here? And he couldn't, you know, be less social with me, right? I mean, talk about one word answers, not reciprocating a question. I'm like, come on, dude. Like, I'm like, where are you from? He's from Colorado. I'm like, great. I'm like, oh, well, I'm from Chicago. I just drove down here. Did you drive down here from Colorado? I'm like, I got it, right? Just to make conversation. This guy was so unsocial. I'm like, all right, cool, man. Whatever, dude. Like, hey, look, if you want to come by, my room is always open. Please stop by. And I'd be happy to, talk and hang out and all that stuff. And so he never does. His room is always closed. The door of his room is always closed. He's always in his room. I can see his car outside. My girlfriend's with me. And as I finish the race, she was like, hey, guess what? You know that guy? He's like, the reason, like, you know, like, I'll tell you about this guy. He finished, I think it might have been third overall. And she's like, I did some research on him. And he is a first time, he's a pro athlete. It's his first race as a pro athlete, his first half Ironman. He was supposed to do it last year, but obviously with COVID. And yeah, so this is his first race. And he was done by the time you got out for your half marathon, he finished up. I'm like, oh my gosh, how crazy is that, right? And I even went up to him after the race, congratulated him, you know, and he again was very like, you know, pretty antisocial. And I get it, like, you know, like the pandemic's still happening and, you know, but I'm masked up and things like that. I was vaccinated by that point. And I went back and I told my team, and I told my coaches, and like one coach, she said, oh, she's like, you know what? That's a real bummer. You know why? So, cause that's a problem with our pro athletes and elite athletes is that they can't carry the sport because they're not social enough. They don't connect with the average person. Right. It's like, she was naming all these different pro athletes that could do something and be something. And they're amazing athletes, but they lack social skills. And she's like, a bunch of them, they won't get their sponsorships, or their sponsors will recognize this and drop them. They'll absolutely just drop them. Right. So now how do they get the sponsorships to pay their lifestyle? And I think a lot, and you know, I'll say this out loud because I know you have your followers and things like that. The elite athletes and pro athletes don't know how to connect with the average runner or average endurance athlete, triathlete, whatever it is, to help carry that sport, right? To help really make it blossom. And I really truly believe that. And there's not all of them, but there are certainly some. I can think of some right now who are just friends with me, and I'm like, man, it's so. It's just very endearing to know that you're willing to come and talk with me. And I see you talking with everyone, the run walkers and things like that, because I think that's what the sport needs. And I think it's where the sport fails, when I think a lot of people who want to be a budding pro athlete or things like that miss the part that you got to be marketable, you know? So I think that this all kind of like plays into like, man, this is why the sport's at where it's at. Not that it's dying or anything, but man, do you see, I hope people can see that like this sport can jump. It can truly, truly jump. And the pro athletes could be making the same dollars that like an NFL basketball, NBA, MLB player can make too. If we find that right, mix of enthusiasm with athletic excellence, if they have that, right, that one person with that right smile, who's willing to talk to everybody, and recognizes that, man, that this sport can still grow that much more.
No, you make a lot of great points. And there's another podcaster who I really like. His name's Mario Frioli. And he always talks about, connecting the back of the pack to the front of the pack. Because, mm-hmm. both running and triathlons have a diverse, group of people, from elites to people who are just doing this for fun, or mm-hmm. who are just even sub elites. But I feel like you said, there is a big gap, and there's still a lot of athletes who don't necessarily know how to just close that gap to make the sport, more popular than it is.
Yeah, at the same time too, it's not necessarily also everyone's duty to do so, right? Not everyone has the same dream as maybe you and I have. Like I truly do. It is absolutely one of my dreams to help bridge this gap, so that endurance sports, for as great as I recognize and see that it is, and see the amazing things that like the pros and the elites and everyone are doing, to really get that more out in the open. The only person I can really think of that really is making that. The one person I would say, and I don't know if it's an endurance athlete, but he's at least a runner, a sprinter, right? Usain Bolt really was able to market himself and be a little bit more flash, and get people into that world. And I know there's a lot more other sprinters that do that too, actually, but that's the kind of thing I'm talking about. Like that kind of marketability, where he's like always playing with, the volunteers and the kids that are out there. He's always doing those things. And we just don't hear it enough. Actually don't even hear it ever, in our sports right now. So, yeah.
And then, so I want to go back to you a little bit. I want to hear about, your last, you just completed an Ironman. Congratulations.
Thank you. Yeah. We're not even 2 weeks past it yet, right? But I know that we're all still on this pretty big high. And I think, the big piece of it was that it was a longer road than ever imagined. But the funny thing is that this was always supposed to be a bigger than normal year in the first place. In 2018, I had four of my friends. We were all coaches and pacers for CES, Chicago Endurance Sports, up in Lincoln Square. Three of us had already done an Ironman already, and one of us hadn't. And she actually had brought up her own throw her name out there. Her name is Stephanie Majerasek. I hope she enjoys that, threw her name out there. And she threw out there, you know, I could do a marathon in 2 years. And she threw out this, I could do it in 2 years. This is 2018 now, right? I'm like, oh, that's a really good point. You know, like throwing an Ironman out there to anyone to do it the next year is pretty rough. Like you can only talk to maybe a certain, you know, group of people that are maybe half Ironman ready, who are ready to take the next leap, or that have already accomplished an Ironman, right? So that's already a small group. But we had this, you know, like I love community. I love doing this as a group, and, you know, suffering as a group, right? Certainly creates a bond that's very, very strong. Quoting my good friend, Dr. Blake Butler. But he, so we were talking about this. We're like, you know, this would be amazing if all of us, if we can, you know, like we were starting sharing the story amongst the Lincoln Square group, and it was enough people within that group that were saying like, oh my gosh, I would totally do an Ironman in 2 years. Like that gives me more than enough time to like build myself up. I'll do the Sprint Olympic this year. I'll do a half Ironman the next year, and then I'll do the full Ironman the next year. Perfect plan, right? Even for somebody who doesn't even know how to swim that well, it's like, well, I'll learn how to swim this year and get, you know, I'll really lock that in, or learn how to bike this year. And the next year, we'll see how much further this goes. But that could actually happen. You know, we have 2 years. 2 years is a long time to develop the skills, you know, figure out your life, like talk to your, you know, your spouse, to your kids, and figure out how you could plan this out. So we had this plan going, and it was hot. It was really hot. We were talking, you know, on the runs, and I was also coaching at South Loop, and that word got out to, you know, those people, and then those people would reach out to other people. We created our own like private Facebook page. We called it the Dream Team. And we were building this idea that we're going to build up, you know, first time Ironman athletes and alumni Ironman athletes. We're going to build this up, that we're going to show up with the biggest group of friends to do an Ironman together in Madison, where we can, you know, easily drive up to and train. And it has always been a goal race for CES and anyone that's really local here to Chicago or Illinois. And I mean, it was building up really good. And, you know, the registration, I remember a bunch of us went down there in 2019 to watch those Ironman people do and cheer them on. And it gave us, you know, excitement and a visual. And we had so many people register that year. So 2019, the year before, you know, that same weekend, usually when the registration opens for the following year, 2020. And they put out, I remember the race put out this challenge amongst all the training groups to see who can have the most amount of people sign up for their group for the race, and they will get a VIP experience at Ironman Wisconsin in 2020. And off the get, CES jumped to number one. We had immediately, I would say, 30 plus people sign up within the first couple of days. It was unbelievable. And we're like, oh my gosh. And I know this person and this person and this person who still need to register. We're going to hit 50 easily. And then, you know, I mean, the hype was certainly, it was really, really good. And ever, you know, I didn't have to do it myself. I, you know, anyone who was doing this was all of a sudden, you know, an ambassador and a spokesperson and advocate to doing this. It was so funny. I was at the L stop when, you know, at Roosevelt, and I had some guy come from behind and whisper in my ear and say, Dream Team 2020, let's go. And it was just so funny and random. And it was this guy who I saw, and he said he was going to do it too. And then, you know, 2020 hit, and, you know, and I knew off the bat, like, there's a very good likelihood we're not doing this race, which is unfortunate. But again, you know, also at the same time, like, hey guys, give us a little more time to train if we can. Not also realizing that, oh my gosh, this is also the window that some people have with their families. And I realized like two of my friends had kids in this time. Like their plan was do the Ironman 2020, start my family in 2021. And you know, who's going to derail, you know, starting a family to do an Ironman? No one, right? And most people won't. So, and other people, you know, like, you know, jobs and things that were just happening, just, you know, the spirit that's behind it is already gone. You know, 2020, I think for a lot of people, took the wind out of everyone's sails. I think of everyone's sails. I can't imagine too many people, except for the people who started Zoom and, you know, like started, you know, certain things that like went really, really well over the pandemic, which is very few. Otherwise, most of us, you know, the winds, you know, the wind was absolutely taking out our sails. We stuck together, most of us. And even when it wasn't popular to do, we would still get together. We actually had a guy in our group who is an infectious disease doctor in Rush. And he, you know, looked at us. He's like, look, we have a small enough group. We're riding separate enough. I really don't think we're, you know, we're at high risk at all. So we would meet up together. We would go on these rides. It wasn't that group of 30. It was more like a group of like 10 or less, I would say. But we stuck together, and I could see, you know, through Strava, people are doing their thing. People are doing their thing. And even our coaches and even us, we actually put together our own, you know, grassroots do it ourselves half Ironman. And we did, you know, started up in Wilmette. We swam at one of the beaches up there, rode, you know, created a course that all of us would do that we had on Ride with GPS. So we all had the course map on our bike computers and our headsets. And we ran a small, you know, little half marathon out there. We brought our own food. The November Project, they were instrumental in this. They're maybe one of the pinnacles of the grassroots and supporting and cheering people on. And then we did it again with our own training group, and our coaches put it out there. They put out buoys into the lake, and it was, you know, it was good, but it wasn't, you know, it was not the same. You know, you know this, Michael, and probably everyone that's listening to this podcast, you can't, it's really hard to replicate the energy that is on race day. Right. You just can't do it on your own. You can't do it with 10 people. It's fun to do. It's still, you know, it's fun, but it's not the same. And then, you know, this year, I think it was really amazing. You know, like we were slowly bringing it back. We, you know, the team was still there. We still had 30-ish people that did the Ironman with us. It was more of a mix of the half Ironman and full Ironman. We still had new people join the group, which was amazing. Right. New blood, new spirit and energy. Right. Who didn't know any better. And I remember the first day that we were, you know, given the green light that it was going to be safe enough of us, you know, like we're vaccinated and things like that we can meet up as a full group. And we did that first bike ride. And I remember it was epically amazing. I do remember like it was yesterday. We, you know, a few of us were hugging, right? We're like, you know, like I remember looking at one of the guys on our team. I call him favorite Uncle Warren. He was the first person I hugged, and I looked at him. I'm like, and we put our arms out, and I'm like, and I said, "Hey, I'm vaccinated." And he's like, "I'm vaccinated too." I'm like, "I think we can hug this out." And I remember we hugged it out, and you know, a few other people hugged it out. It really was amazing and awesome to do as a group of friends, you know, to meet up and start training together. And even still, you know, I think a lot of us, even though we were, you know, somewhat ready, we, you know, over 2020, we did meet up for Zoom calls and we did work out, you know, did like, you know, Zoom, like strength workouts at home. We were doing, you know, the indoor biking, you know, at home. And some of us were, you know, getting out there. I think it was still kind of tough. In fact, you know, like even over that time, a group of, you know, friends, five of us, we all got together and we started a little hiking group. Like we were kind of burnt out from the idea of Zoom and even training. We didn't have it in us to train. We were actually all fairly injured and some of us had surgeries. Actually, I would say the majority of the group had surgeries, which is very interesting. But I think that time in the woods and doing these trail hikes, not even runs, trail hikes, was really, really amazing. And it really helped, I think, just rejuvenate our spirits. You know, there's a connection and you know, I know the functional medicine doctors and acupuncturists, the people that I work with, are huge advocates about getting out into nature and how that will kind of restore your energy with getting out into nature and taking walks and hikes and things like that. So we spent a good, I mean, months just doing that, not wanting to train whatsoever. And when we got back to training, I think it was the right thing. We slowly amped ourselves up. I know a bunch of us took different, you know, breaks at a time. And I think those were key too. You know, like I took key breaks within training to go explore a different national park and go and do different hikes, or even just take a break altogether, just to allow myself to, like, you know, not get myself burnt out by training super hard, knowing that there's a chance that the Ironman might get canceled, and you know that we, you know, that we can, or that we might still do the race. You know, there's still a potential burning out. But you know, as those weeks kind of progress, and like we, our team had two different camps, one in May, and then another one in August. And once those kind of camps happened, we got a chance to meet together as a full group and do the full sport and do everything in Madison. It started to feel like this is really, really going to happen. And it was awesome. You know, it was really great to share with everyone in that group, like all the challenges that we had and like the burnout that we were feeling, and like, and the feeling like, I don't know if we're ready and maybe we're ready and things like that, you know? And then the day happened, right? Like the weekend, I can't tell you how much energy was in this weekend, maybe because you know, I did two other races prior to this, and a few others had other races too. But this was the race. This is the race that we had been waiting for since 2018. That so many of us have been waiting for. And even the spectators that were going to come out, all of our friends and the coaches and family knew this is what we've been waiting for. And to be there on that weekend, to spend so much time and really try to link up as many times as we all could. We did our shakeout runs. We had breakfast together. We had dinner together. Like, you know, we went out for a swim together. We went for a shakeout bike together. We all went, you know, to the athletes briefing together. We went and shopped together, right? There was so many things that we just kept, you know, not all of us, you know, I get all of us had different, you know, timelines and things that we needed to do and lock in for, but for a good majority, a lot of us got a chance to see each other. And then, you know, come race day, I mean, what an truly amazing experience, to be back there. And things weren't, you know, I did it in 2016, so I knew what things were before, but it was pretty close. It was pretty close to being what it was. Of course, you know, the registration signups weren't to the number that it was, say, like in 2019, but it was still there. It was still good. You know, the people in Madison, you can't ask for a better place to be. You have the downtown area. You had the college, you know, University of Wisconsin right there, and all those students coming out to cheer people on. You have the beautiful Wisconsin, you know, farm side. We're out there and you're, you know, for an Ironman, there's a lot of times you're out there by yourself. You know, there's no drafting on the bike, so you can't be in a Peloton like the Tour de France. So there's a nice little mix. You get to be out there with your own thoughts and your own experiences, right? That's almost the time where I actually get emotional, right? I'm there actually with my own thoughts. There's sometimes no one around me. So that's all you got is you and your own thoughts. And then there's spots where you find the groups and you're out there with other riders and you're looking at each other like, I can't believe we're doing this. Every one of my races I did this year, that was this like ringing sentiment amongst other races. Like, I can't believe we're out here doing this. This is amazing. And, you know, sharing the sentiment of like, have a great day. Whatever happens, they just have a great day, whatever it is. And then, you know, where we're at on the race, where CES is at, when I say we, there we have three different locations where they train at. One big spot is there's these three places, for those who don't know about Madison, it's a very hilly bicycle course. It's cumulatively roughly about 5,000 feet of climbing, and it's nonstop. It's up and down. It's a very technical course where you just have to be on your gears and things like that. There are three main hills called the Three Sisters. And there are these long, you know, arduous hills compared to the other rest of the hills on the course. And on the last hill, it's called Midtown. And truly on each three of these hills, that's where most of the spectators come out, because they know that's where they need to be for their athletes, because that's where we need their support. And CES sits at the top of Midtown, and they truly do arguably bring out the biggest support group and the loudest. And there's all these other wonderful groups that are out there, local from Wisconsin and Chicago. And it was so epically amazing. I have to tell you, like, the adrenaline that was running through my veins that day and on that bike course, I don't think I've ever rode that course better than I ever have. Ever. And I did it on race day. And it was because the fans were out there, the spectators were there, CS was out there. And every time I would see these groups and these people, as much as I knew I needed to like kind of reserve myself because I really wanted to put together a good marathon, it was so hard to hold back the emotion and the adrenaline because of that. Right. And but you know, it was still amazing. I was able to hold myself together on that, you know, enough where I knew I did my nutrition plan well. And I had, you know, when we did our camp, which is our 20-mile weekend, I gotten all my mistakes out. I made mistakes and I'm like, I'm not going to make those same mistakes on races. There's just no way. I got it now. And I corrected it. And I, you know, thankfully had an amazing, amazing day. I hit personal records on all three of the disciplines, including the transition. So my swim was 7 minutes faster than my previous swim in 2016. My transitions were 10 minutes faster than they were in 2016. My bike was 20 minutes faster than 2016. My marathon was the biggest chunk. And I think a big piece of that is I came in healthy and really understanding like what strength training and what my nutrition and stretching and all that recovery pieces. Thank you to Align Modern Health to helping me to get to the start line that healthy and understand my body. And I shaved off like an hour, I don't know, I would say an hour and a half or so. So do the math a little bit, and it ended up being like 2 hours and 12 minutes of a PR, which is which is pretty wild when you hear about it. But when you think of like just the things that, you know, I had to deal with in 2016, the injuries and things like that, it's easy to see why I had just a big chunk of a PR. But, you know, this is a buildup for 2 years. I was not going to let this opportunity slip. Right. I'll throw this out there. I got COVID. I got the symptoms last Christmas, and certainly I felt it on a run. So I knew what it was like to like try to run and go, oh my gosh, my lungs feel on fire. And I walked it back home after a mile. Right. And then even before that, I sprained my ankle so bad. You know, those ankle sprains, so like there's different degrees of sprains. I was not walking, like barely walking. I was shuffling around everywhere for like 8 weeks. So it was a good 12 weeks where I didn't do anything. So to have that build up from that, and I had it always in my head, like, there's no way I'm going to let this opportunity slip. I will do everything any professional is asking me to do, as in like our coaches and, you know, the medical staff that I had at Align helped me to get to race day. Like, I was not going to take anything for granted, you know, that I was going to make sure we capitalize on this opportunity. And thank God, we had the opportunity to do it. So we did.
Yeah, I think the last two, you said a lot of things there that I think can relate to people who have upcoming fall marathons. It's like, you know, don't take things for granted, kind of enjoy the day and, you know, use the energy. Along those lines, like, especially for us in Chicago, like, what are some advice that you have for people over the last like couple of weeks, like gearing up for Chicago?
Yeah. I think most people had their last 20 miler last weekend. I know some people are still doing their 20 miler, doing another one this upcoming weekend. But you know, I did encounter some people who had a rough 20 miler, right? And I get it. And I think to a lot of people, especially your first timers, you'll feel like, if I didn't have a good 20 miler, how the heck am I going to have a good 26 miler, right? 26.2 miler. And the only thing I can tell them is like, look, it is, there's, you can learn from your mistakes. In fact, I feel like you should seek mistakes, even from here until race day. Seek out things that you can still improve on, and you still can. You have 2 weeks to clean up your diet, right? You have 2 weeks to do that. That's a big plus. You can improve your sleep over the next 2 weeks. You can still do, you know, the rest of your training plan. And I think a lot of your training plan, when, you know, we do a taper, that's usually just like the overall load. But I know that with a lot of people, maybe not all, but a lot of people's training plans, it'll still ask you to do things, you know, at X amount of intensity. And I would say still do those things. You know, I learned my last tip. Here's two things I learned. One, I made a mistake at our camp. I think I may have mentioned that. I made a big mistake on nutrition. And I knew it. I knew it going into our second loop of the bike. I'm like, darn, like I missed doing something that I had intended on doing. And I paid the price on our second loop of doing the bike course on camp. And I didn't beat myself up. I just told myself, like, you know what? I know what the mistake was. I'm going to go and correct that. So I asked everyone, like, you know, if you recognize what you could have done, and be real with yourself, like, dude, be real, right? Like, how well did you really eat? And how well did you really take your hydration and your nutrition and your sleep? How well did you take your salt? So that's a huge piece. I think people miss that. I think people are just like, no, I was drinking a lot of water. Water is almost, you can only drink so much water. If you're not taking your electrolytes and your salt, it's almost irrelevant. And I learned that a lot this year. You know, so you need that. You need that. You can correct those things on that. I also learned on my second, my last speed work day, my coach had in our training plan, had this little workout. They said, do 20, 30 second pickups every mile just to be able to pick things up and shake things out. It's almost like you're shaking yourself out while you're in mid run, almost like a stretch. I took that tip. I'm like, that sounds really good. I think I'm going to do that in the Ironman, in the marathon portion. Every mile, I'm going to look to just do a little pickup, not run harder, just do a quicker cadence for 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And I was like, oh my gosh, like, I can't tell you how much that helped me. You know, especially on a flat course where you don't have hills to allow you to activate certain muscles, right? To kind of open up your stride a little bit, like that helped me. I can't tell everyone to do that same thing, but it helped me. So those are really, really key things. There's truly things that you can still do to improve and get yourself ready before race day. And I think that big piece is like, gosh, go into race day with gratitude that, first of all, with other races being canceled all around, you know, around the country and the world, if, you know, knock on wood, if we get a chance to toe the line on race day in unison, everyone should be saying, you know, some sort of thanks to whatever higher being, to whatever thing it is that we're able to go out there and race. And even that we're physically able, you know, going into the race, I also, like, you know, I was super nervous. I told my coach how nervous I was, and I didn't know why. I'm like, I know I can do this. I was just nervous. Like, I wanted to do it to the ability that I can feel proud of myself. And we came up with the idea of having a gratitude week. So during the week of Ironman, I just did, you know, thank you posts to different, you know, the village that helped me get to Ironman. So I did that every day. And truly, you know what? It helped me reflect and helped me really feel like I got this village behind me and this community and the support behind me. I felt stronger because of it going to race day. So I think that's another, you know, another piece that you don't have to wait till the night before. Start doing it now, right? Start thinking of, like, you know, all the gratitude. It, you know, it's not so much what everyone else can do for you, but, you know, everyone, you know, like, you know, what are the things that you can put out there and you know, just say thank you, you know, to everyone else for and put out that energy of thanks. I can promise that, like, that energy is going to come back to you on race day.
Yeah, I think, you know, like you said, like, hopefully we get to toe the line, because, you know, we had two races canceled today. I don't know if you saw that, you know, Marine Corps.
Oh, I saw.
And then the Milwaukee one. It was such a bummer that it's still happening. But hopefully, you know, I've got Boston coming up. So hopefully Boston, Chicago, you know, Berlin, London, all those races, you know, go off without any hitches.
Yeah. I really hope so too, man. And I feel like, you know, being 2 weeks out from Chicago, let's get through this next week. And then by the time they have to be setting up the week beforehand, I think we're going to be in a really good spot. And thankfully, you know, being in Chicago, I think compared to, like, say, Tokyo, right? Like, Tokyo, they canceled their marathon. You know, and someone else brought up to me that their vaccination rate their positivity rate was much higher than ours. Their vaccination rate was lower than ours. So I think those two things being put into play in Chicago, I think we're in a good spot overall. You know, knock on wood, I know that a lot of people are maybe a little nervous as we, you know, as you see that news pop up and as we get a little bit closer to the race. But I think once we're a week out, I think we're going to be in a really good spot.
All right, so we've chatted for a while about all sorts of stuff, but I want to close this out with, what are some things that you do for fun outside of the fitness world?
Oh, man. I mean, you know, I think I alluded to this before, like, you know, the fitness world truly is like, the health and wellness world is the guide for, like, everything that I do, right? Almost everything I do. But I mean, I love team sports and, you know, through and through. You know, I told you I grew up here in the Jordan era, and definitely grew up with a family that loves sports. I love, you know, catching, you know, big sporting events. We're in a house of White Sox fans, so it's a good time right now in our house as the White Sox just clinched the division. So that's really exciting. And so I love, you know, going to the ballpark, catching sports and things like that. Going to my first concert next week. So I do enjoy, like, the live music. I am also a very big foodie. You know, I worked in the restaurant industry for a number of years. So I do love going out to the restaurants and you know, the whole experience of it, right? Like, communicating and interacting with, you know, the wait staff, the chef, and experiencing what they have to offer and things like that. And sharing a good meal and conversation with people. I think that's really great. I think I even threw that out there too. I love podcasts. I really do. Like, really it's more so like the self, you know, empowerment stuff. I love hearing, like, inspirational stories. I love that. So that's really exciting. And you know what? Like, I love this, you know, like, as far as TV wise, I was talking to my friends. I'm like, man, I don't have nearly as many shows as many people follow. But over COVID, we did do the whole, you know, Marvel series. We went through it, you know, from start to finish, from release, and then from chronological order. So I do love going on to, like, Disney Plus and, like, watching, you know, all the different series that kind of connect to that. I still have to go out to the theater and watch the new one that kind of came out. But yeah, anything that has anything to do with the Marvel series, I love that stuff. So yeah, there's a ton of things that I love, man. I just love having fun, going out, having a good time. And then I think I even alluded to this before, like, oh my gosh, like that, the biggest thing that I got into during COVID, during 2020, was the national park scene and just the outdoors. I realized, like, oh my gosh, I love hiking. I love going at a slower pace, seeing beautiful things, being off our phones, not having, music and the sound with us, but just by, kind of being within nature. And then going out and drive, I've done a ton of road trips and, big epic hikes, to like in Zion and Grand Canyon, the Smokies, Shenandoah, all that stuff. So like that's certainly a big thing on my next 2022 list, is setting up all these new epic adventures, even more so than racing in the next year. I just want to see more of our country and the natural side of it. So those are all the things that I love.
It's like a never ending adventure. I love it.
Yeah, man. Right. It was that seeking out more of what we're capable to do and see, right? Full circle in our podcast, just seeking out more things that we're capable of seeing and doing.
Yeah. So I do have one TV recommendation for you that I love. Okay. I've been trying to get everyone on this show. It's called Money Heist. I don't know if you're familiar with it, but it's like one of the best kept secrets on Netflix.
Awesome. I've had people certainly recommend that. And because it's coming from you, I think that like this might be, the breaker that puts me into that series. So yeah, certainly. I've heard Money Heist for sure.
Oh, you're going to love it. It has captions, but the captions are not that hard to read. And I feel like I actually, I pay way more attention because of the captions and like the character development over the show. You like start to fall in love with characters. You get sad when some go away. It's just, I've been hooked and I'm just like, this is the fifth and final season. I'm kind of sad, but I think you'll love it.
Oh, awesome. I love that. I do. I'm glad that you said that, all those things about this one. First of all, I didn't realize it was all captioned. What language is it spoken in?
So I watched it, dubbed in English. But I think it is filmed in Spain.
Okay. Awesome. Cool. No, I love that. I actually appreciate that. Yeah, even more, right? Like, reading the captions and hearing those things. And I did take Spanish for a number of years, so it would be really cool to see how much I could pick up with that. But that would be really cool to watch. Two, you said character development. I think that's really huge in following any kind of series. I think that's why the MCU did so well. Is that they really develop their characters over time really, really well. So I think that's really, really big. I think that's a really good selling point that you gave me. And, it is a bummer that you said it's already on its fifth season. I feel like this happens to me all the time where, someone, gives a big suggestion to the series. It comes at the end. And then I just do, a big, marathon of the series and rip through it over a month's time, something like that. So yeah, I'll certainly look forward to doing that over the next fall and winter, man. And I'll definitely, throw back, my thoughts and ideas as they come, because you're probably be the first person I think of.
Awesome. I love it. Thanks again for taking the time out of your night to join me. This was a lot of fun.
Awesome. No, thank you so much for reaching out. I love having this conversation with people, and and any other suggestions you ever have for me about all the things that we talked about, I'm certainly all open to hearing them.
I appreciate it. Thanks, man.
Yeah. All right. Thank you. Take care.
All right. See ya.
Thank you for taking time out of your day to join me, Ryan. I hope you all enjoyed getting to know him. Congrats again on your giant PB at the Ironman. You almost convinced me to try and sign up for an Ironman. Just kidding. I don't like biking or swimming enough. I will put in the show notes on where you can find him online, and I'll talk to you soon.